I will now ask Brother Grant Bowden to come forward and speak to us to the subject, Preaching the Gospel, the Life of Brother Robert Roberts.
Thanks. Well, good evening, brethren and sisters and young people. Well, tonight, brothers and sisters, we're going to revisit the life of Brother Roberts. And we do well to ask the question, why should we do so? Why should we do that in the context of renewing our gospel spirit? It was some 106 years ago when Brother Roberts passed away. Why is it that we should look at the life of man that lived so long ago? And how relevant is his life today to us? Well, I think it's important, brothers and sisters, that we do just that, that we go back and look at the spirit that pervaded that man, the spirit that motivated him to preach the gospel in the way that he did, the utter conviction that he had to speak of the things that he so confidently believed would be fulfilled in his lifetime. And so what we're going to do tonight, brothers and sisters, is to look at the life of Brother Roberts, not so much with a view to covering his life from a historical point of view, or in fact to deal with all the works that he produced in his lifetime. We're going to instead try and get behind the scenes, as it were, and to look at the spirit of Brother Roberts, particularly from a gospel point of view. We need to understand the context in which Brother Roberts lived. It was a very significant time in the period of history. It was so appropriate that there should be someone like Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts emerge into the panorama of history at the time when they did. Because, you see, there was coming to an end the rule that the papacy had over the... So it's important to consider, as we're saying, brothers and sisters, the context in which Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts appeared on the scene. The apostles had received the commission, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." And we know that in the first few centuries following the work of the apostles, that the ecclesias grew enormously in that time. But of course, the papacy began its period of dominion across the earth, and what was needed when 1260 years later that iron grip began to relinquish was to have people who were prepared to take advantage of that opportunity to preach the gospel. What was needed was a man to break the clods, to open the war against the world, to do the rough work connected with resowing the good seed of the kingdom. The one who would do this work would of necessity be of strong character and drive and be independent of others. Such was the makeup of the man who was to discover the long-lost faith of the apostles amidst the ruin of theology. And that man, of course, we know was Brother John Thomas. His search for the truth was a journey of some 14 years. And during the sixth year of that journey, across the Atlantic in Scotland, another journey began. Thanks, Jono. Brother Roberts was born in Aberdeen, Scotland. The unhappy event, as he calls it, happened on the 8th of April, 1839. And as we said, our objective tonight is to look at the spirit behind the man. And what we're going to do initially is to consider his life from a chronological point of view so that we, I suppose, get a structured appreciation of his development. And we're going to treat the end of his life in the same way. But for the middle part of his life, we're going to look at it basically thematically. Thanks, John. Well, we're going to look at some of the influences in the life of Brother Roberts. His father was a seaman, and by virtue of that, he was away for much of the time. It seems that his father was a fairly simple sort of man. He, as Brother Roberts put it, his mother made up for the lack of or the deficiency of mental energy of his father. His mother was quite a different person. His mother was, as it says, a hard-working Baptist of severe and moral religious principles. She was, as Brother Robert said, a woman of superior, energetic and strongly religious turn of mind. For example, Brother Roberts had been working as an assistant in a grocer's store, and he says that she discovered that in addition to grocery items being sold in the store, that there was also sold liquor. And it says, "She promptly terminated my employment when it was discovered that strong drink was also served." She had many difficulties to cope with. She had 7 children to raise. Much of the time, her husband was absent. But in measure, she managed to surmount them all. Brother Robert said, she brought us up in strict separation from loose and frivolous neighbours. And that's something I think we do well to keep in mind, young people. She kept us separate from loose and frivolous neighbours. Brother Roberts was able to look back and appreciate the wisdom of the guidance and the boundaries that his mother placed upon his life and helped to make him what he was. Looking back, I can realise her difficulties and her worth as I could not at that time. In Brother Roberts' life, life was hard and luxuries were few. And home, as he says, was a place of wholesome discipline rather than of love's comfort. And family life impressed upon Brother Roberts the reality of death. He had 6 brothers and 1 sister. Ebenezer, the youngest of the six, died in early manhood. William was drowned at sea. John, the eldest, died in middle life. And apart from those 7 that survived, there were 4 others that died in infancy. And so what we find, brothers and sisters, is that at the age of 13, Brother Roberts had learned to put away childish things, and he had set his objectives on where he was going so far as work was concerned at that point in his life. So we can see that he had what we might call a very austere upbringing, and that certainly was reflected in his character. At the age of 11, Brother Roberts left school. He had a number of jobs in his career which began at the age of 11 and went through, we might say, until the age of 30. By the time Brother Roberts was 30, he was the full-time editor of what was the first magazine titled The Ambassador. So it was a relatively short life in the commercial world, you might say, but one that was filled with many different experiences. His first job in a rope seller was filling his brother Arthur's place while his brother was unwell or somewhere else. And after that, he said he had a strong desire to become a cabinet maker. And his mother would take him from one cabinet making place to another. But he says they would have none of me, because when they looked at me, they thought I wasn't strong enough. And he said it's probably just as well that they saw me that way, because otherwise my life may have turned out significantly different. At the age of 13, he found himself unemployed. And he had a strong desire at that point in time to follow the example of his 2 brothers to go to sea. And I think some of these little instances in the life of Brother Roberts tell us a lot about the man. I think Brother Collier, in his book on Robert Roberts, makes that point. He says, if you want to learn about a person, you don't look at the great achievements in their life. You look at some of the more, what might seem to be, insignificant things. For example, how does a husband greet a wife when he comes home from work? That can sometimes, brothers and sisters, tell us a lot more about a person than what they're like on a platform. And so it was with Brother Roberts. So as we go through tonight, if you think some of the anecdotes that we bring up might seem insignificant, Brother Collier makes the point that you really don't understand his character until you look at some of those insignificant things. And one of them was this. At the age of 13, he had a strong desire to go to sea. And he says that he was walking one day by the ships in the harbour, and he decided that to go to sea would mean that he would be cut off from all opportunity of improvement. And in his words, I would probably grow up as a barbarian. So he considered his education an important part of his life. And he wanted to position himself in life so that he would be able to read and to gain a reasonable employment. As we can see there, he had a number of jobs. He was apprenticed to a druggist, and he used that opportunity to learn shorthand, which greatly aided his work in the truth later on. We find also that he worked as a journalist in a number of places, beginning first at Aberdeen, then Edinburgh at the age of 18. And by the way, wherever you see numbers in brackets, that's how old he was at the time. And finally, he worked as a journalist in Huddersfield. Well, not finally, but he then moved to Huddersfield as a journalist. He spent some time as a shorthand writer with a phrenologist, but that only lasted for about a year, and he realised it wasn't the sort of work that a brother could be involved in. So right throughout his life, he was prepared to make decisions that were to his own detriment from a worldly point of view. At the age of 22, he returned back to Huddersfield again as a journalist. He subsequently took up a position with the Birmingham Daily Post, and that was one of the leading newspapers at the time. It was a very good opportunity so far as the world was concerned. But once again, Brother Roberts chose not to stay in that role for very long because it was compromising his ability to serve in the truth. His move to Birmingham resulted from the suggestion of Brother Thomas during his visit in 1862. He then, as it says, got a job with the bankruptcy court. And though this position at the that position subsequently came to an end after a short period of time, and though his position at the Birmingham Daily Post had great prospects, Robert Roberts did not want all his time to be absorbed by the continual demands of real journalism. He decided to leave the Post and, in doing so, closed the door on worldly success. During the third and final visit of John Thomas to England, Robert Roberts' appointment at the bankruptcy court ended. The doctor spoke to some of those well-to-do who, reaping spiritual advantages, were debtors in carnal things. He arranged that instead of a salary for reporting ephemeral affairs, Robert Roberts should have a salary for editing a monthly magazine in the service of the truth. So ended Robert Roberts' struggle in the commercial world. Brother Collier wrote, "The liberty, that is, of being paid, has been the subject of so much abuse that it is no doubt better to follow the apostolic example as far as we can. But when it comes to a monthly magazine, a publishing office, and a central clearinghouse for the troubles of the world, we call to mind the scriptural comment, 'Wisdom is profitable to direct.' Dr. Thomas was a wise man." Unquote. And so just to give us an appreciation of the places that he lived in, he was born in Aberdeen, then he moved to Edinburgh. From Edinburgh he moved to Huddersfield, and from Huddersfield he subsequently moved to Birmingham. So all the time moving further south. And as he moved further south, he spent longer and longer at each of those places. He moved to Edinburgh at 18. He was only there for a few years. Then he spent a couple of years in Huddersfield. And finally, at the age of 23, he moved to Birmingham at the suggestion of Brother Thomas. Well, what was his first contact with the truth? In 1849, having returned to England, Brother Thomas visited places that he had been to before, as well as to Aberdeen and to Dundee. Only 2 years before that visit, Brother Thomas had finally reached the end of his 14-year journey for the search of truth, and he was baptised for the third time. So at the time of this visit to England, he's only been 2 years, if you like, with what we would call a full knowledge of the truth. But he was confident now of what he believed, and so he embarked upon a preaching campaign in England, and one of the places that he went to was Aberdeen. And among the audience was a 10-year-old boy. It was Robert Roberts. His impression of the occasion was thus. "The address had not struck me at all. I was too young to receive any impression. I had, in fact, wearied and slept under it and was glad when it was over. The one thing that interested me and my brothers was the speaker's beard. As we went home together, arm in arm, we vowed that we should never shave." 3 years later, circumstances changed in Brother Roberts' life. There were two incidents that prepared Brother Roberts' heart for receiving the good seed of the gospel. At the age of 13, he was caught wagging night school and spent some time on the streets with a companion. Robert Roberts wrote, He regaled myself and my brother with all sorts of crazy delights from the shop window, to the ruin of my health. It's probably lollies or something like that. Being found out, we were summoned before the schoolmaster by the boy's father and subjected to an examination which made our teeth to chatter. And his shame and his remorse was further deepened by a certain sermon that he was taken to by his mother. He wrote, "I was overcome by his glowing representations of the divine mercy for miserable sinners. I was in tears during his entire discourse and went home in a state of mind that lasted some time. I became absorbingly religious as was possible with me." He had brothers and sisters at that point in his life negotiated some slippery paths in youth, but now his heart was matured somewhat. Now he was ready to receive the seed of the gospel. But how was it to find its way into a strongly Baptist home? Well, at this time, in searching through some reading material in his house, he discovered the Herald of the Kingdom and became a voracious reader of it and the Bible. He found a copy of the Herald of the Kingdom, An Age to Come, which was published, of course, by John Thomas. It had been subscribed to by his older sister. He was greatly impressed by it and with eagerness looked forward to every issue. Shortly afterwards, he was given a copy of Elpis Israel by a neighbour. And this is what he had to say about Elpis Israel. This is what he had to say after he had read Elpis Israel. He concluded that popular theology was a hideous caricature of divine truth, and that the system of things contended for by Dr. Thomas was according to a full and correct understanding of the whole scriptures of Moses, the prophets and the apostles. He resolved to have nothing more to do with the church. And bear in mind, brothers and sisters, he's still a lad at this time. He's still only 12 or 13 years of age. Well, how was that resolution to be effected? It wasn't to be effected easily. As we said, he had a mother who was of strong religious principles, but she was a Baptist. He discovered from the same old lady that secured him a copy of Elpis Israel that there was a small meeting of believers in the things taught by John Thomas, and he was taken there one Sunday afternoon. "I attended this afternoon meeting regularly for a time," he says. "A meeting was held in the forenoon, but this I could not attend on account of having to go to the chapel under the iron law in force at home. From this, I finally determined to break away." And here comes an interesting little incident. He says, "Accordingly, one Sunday morning, I left the house an hour before the usual time and made a long detour outside the town, avoiding on my return the road where I would be likely to meet my mother and brothers going to chapel, and coming in by a road that led me to the neighbourhood of the brethren's meeting place. Attendance at the chapel had become a pain to me, and therefore it was with unspeakable sense of relief that I found myself in the small room among the brethren, instead of among the pews in a large congregation." And apparently this little room where the brethren did meet was almost like a matchbox, but for Brother Roberts, it was everything, the fact that he could have an intelligent conversation with people about the Word of God. "When I got home, my mother did not speak to me, but there was thunder in her face and manner. The day passed in cloud and sultriness, and at night the storm broke." Don't you love his words? "Subsequently, the terrible outpour ended with a command never more to enter the church door. From that day, I bade farewell to pulpits and all kinds of ecclesiastical edifices and clerical operations." And he says, "The unhappiness of home drove me to take closer refuge in the Bible." And subsequently, to the joy of Brother Roberts, his mother, his sister, and his eldest brother did in fact come into the truth. At the age of 14, Robert Roberts was baptised. He was examined by a couple of brethren and immersed in the River Dee, which was about a mile outside town. He said it was a beautiful summer's morning. There was a crowd of Sunday strollers on the bank who gave a loud laugh when the act of baptism was performed. Well, Brother Roberts, from that point in time, brothers and sisters, never looked back. He set his course in life at the age of 14, and he knew where he was going. At the age of 13, he read 7 chapters of the Bible every day. At the age of 16, he perceived the need for studying the scriptures in a methodical way, and that led him to produce what we now call the Bible Reader's Companion. And by the age of 23, he was known by every Christadelphian worldwide. Not too long afterwards, Brother Roberts was married. There were certain qualities that Brother Roberts was looking for in a partner, and we can see on the transparency what those qualities were. He says, "I actually met her for the first time at the age of 13 when I was assisting my master's son in some photographic work. She was at this time a grown girl, close to the threshold of womanhood, and would have been disagreeably impressed had she been told that the mite of a boy in attendance upon the amateur photographer was her future husband." Almost 40 years later, Brother Roberts was in the company of some Gentile young men who were talking about the girls that they knew, and daringly ventured to draw Robert Roberts into the conversation. "I expect you were just as bad as we were, Mr. Roberts, when you were young," they said. And his answer says much. "I haven't got over it yet," said Robert Roberts, "for although I have been married for 40 years, I still have a sweetheart in my life." Well, little more than a year after they were married, the young couple witnessed the miracle of new life. But in the next year, they were also to be visited by the messenger of death. They had 6 children in all, but only 2 of them survived. And what an enormous trial that would have been, brothers and sisters. And some of those children passed away within a month of each other, at a period in his life where he was extremely busy. And he writes in describing that he crushed down sorrow and he continued on with singleness of mind. It was at the age of 23 that Robert Roberts first met with Brother Thomas and conversed with him. In fact, Brother Thomas came to Huddersfield and spent some time under his roof. And he writes, "It's impossible to exaggerate the charm of Dr. Thomas's company under our own roof. He was a totally different man from what his writings prepared us to expect. He was quiet, gentle, courteous, well-mannered, modest, absolutely devoid of affectation or trace of self-importance." And Robert Roberts said he felt that Brother Thomas was the most Christ-like person that he had ever known. It was during that visit that Brother Thomas spoke of the need for someone to begin a magazine in England. Brother Thomas, of course, was spending most of his time in America at this stage, Brother Roberts, of course, being in Birmingham. So Brother Roberts moved to Birmingham at the age of 25 and started a magazine called The Ambassador. And the first issue, as it says, in 1864 had 16 pages per number. That might not seem a lot at first, but bear in mind that those 16 pages were all written by Brother Roberts. And by October, 3 years later, it had grown to 28 pages. Just a little bit about how Brother Roberts came to be selected as editor. When in Huddersfield, which was only an ecclesia of 6, he organised a series of 12 lectures. In fact, he not only organised them, he presented them. He paid for the rent of the hall, for the printing of all the advertising and all the other expenses. And the result was that between 70 to 100 friends attended each of those 12 lectures. Quite an outstanding response. The lecture notes were subsequently printed and became what we know today as Christendom Astray. So bearing in mind, the next time you pick up a copy of Christendom Astray, I'll just grab one actually. that Christendom Australia was produced by Brother Roberts at the age of 25. And all the chapters that appear in here were actually lectures that he gave, a total of 12 in all. So quite a remarkable effort for someone at that age. And what happened was a copy of the notes that were produced from those lectures got into the hands of Brother Thomas. And on reading the lectures, Brother Thomas formed the opinion that Robert Roberts was the right man to start a magazine in England. When he began as editor in 1864 at the age of 25, his life was totally filled with responsibilities. Apart from caring for his own family, he had an invalid sister, her husband, and four children lodging with him. He was preaching almost every Sunday, and at the same time, he was earning a living as a reporter on a leading daily newspaper. It's interesting to note that the Ambassador, if you've ever seen and most of us would have seen a copy of the Ambassador. Can you recall that at the top of the first page, there's a passage from Scripture that Brother Roberts chose to encapsulate what he saw was the mantra, if you like, of the magazine. And of all verses to pick, Brother Roberts picked Proverbs 13, verse 17. A wicked messenger falleth into mischief, but a faithful ambassador is health. It was unfortunate, however, that one of the church magazines was called The Messenger. And the supporters of The Messenger could not be convinced that he was innocent of sarcastic intention. On moving to Birmingham, Robert Roberts was for some time without work for the job that was promised. When he did secure work, where was his first pay to go? If it was you or I, brothers and sisters, after we'd been unemployed for a period of time and we'd finally secured employment, what would we have done? What would we have done with our first pay packet that we received? Perhaps finally bought some needed furniture or moved to a new home? No, not in the case of Brother Roberts. He used that money to finance printing the first edition of The Ambassador. It was said by Islip Collier that he had never met anyone to compare with Brother Roberts in the apparently spontaneous movement of conversation to the rich fields of Scripture, in a perfectly natural way in which every thought was given a turn in the direction of the great things which dominated his mind. I'd like to read to you just a small paragraph from Robert Roberts by Islip Collier, which illustrates the way in which, at all times, he turned the conversation onto spiritual things. On this occasion, he was talking to a mining engineer. The mining engineer went on to say that there was plenty of coal to last for another 1,000 years. And so listen to the way that Brother Roberts turns the conversation around and brings it back to the truth. Robert asked, "What then?" The mining engineer replied that men would find some cheap way of producing electricity. Robert Roberts, "What of harnessing the tides?" The engineer, "Possible, but the plant would be too expensive." Robert Roberts, "It could be done on a vast scale if they used all the money now spent on war and preparations for war." The engineer, "But governments are bound to keep up armies and navies." And so he steps in, Robert Roberts. "Armies and navies would not be needed if all the world were under one government." The engineer, "Ah, that is a big if." And so he got his leg in. And many times like that, he was able to turn the conversation around, not just brothers and sisters, because it was something that he thought would be better to talk about, but because he couldn't help talking about it. That was the spirit of the man. That was how he was. And you know, in a way, brothers and sisters, when you look at the life of Brother Roberts, initially I thought, well, we'll just deal with his life from a gospel point of view. But you see, you can't really separate the gospel and Robert Roberts because they were one and the same thing. It was what occupied his mind. Brother Roberts preached not as a matter of duty, but in response to an irresistible personal desire to speak of the things that were dear to him. His readiness to preach was truly instant in season and out of season. There was one occasion when he was travelling between continents on a vessel, and the sea was that rough that even the captain was sick. Where was Robert Roberts? Well, he was on the deck. Why was he on the deck? He was on the deck because there was someone on the deck that was interested in talking to the truth. So Brother Roberts was vigorously holding on to the railings while the ship was tossing backwards and forwards in order that he might have a conversation with his interested friend. He had a profound knowledge and ready recollection of Scripture that made such turns of thought easy. He never succumbed to the temptation to leave the matter at a comfortable level. In other words, when he was talking to an interested friend, he was never content, brothers and sisters, just to talk in platitudes and to talk in generalities. And so when he was on the Darmstadt, which was a German vessel, this is how the conversation went. Thus, on board the Darmstadt, he made contact with some Roman Catholics, favourite company. He asked one of them to look at Revelation 17 and to identify the mystical Babylon. This gentleman said that it meant Jerusalem. Robert Roberts asked if Jerusalem reigned over the nations of the earth. The astonishing answer was that at one time it did so reign. Robert Roberts said, never. He further called attention to the fact that the revelation was given in the first century. There was only one city fitting the description, built on seven hills and reigning over the nations. He added his solemn conviction that there was no salvation in the Roman Catholic Church. This gave offence and put an end to the conversation. And that's how he was. He was always, brothers and sisters, very forthright in what he believed. There was always intensity in his conversation when he was talking about the truth. At one time, it's recorded that he was invited to the home of a very successful brother, and the table was very lavishly set, and there were all sorts of accoutrements on the table that he perhaps wasn't quite used to, very elegantly set out. Brother Roberts commenced a conversation with someone, and one of the idiosyncrasies of Brother Roberts was that whereas normally he was cold, as soon as he started speaking about the truth, he got hot. And so it was a characteristic thing that he'd often take his jacket off before a talk. But he's at this lavishly set table and he commences a conversation with someone and proceeds to get quite warm. And in the process of the conversation, he reaches over and quenches his thirst using the finger bowl. It didn't end there. The conversation proceeded even further, and he proceeded to take his neighbour's finger bowl and drain it as well. Once on a voyage at a dinner table, he became so interested in conversation that he completely forgot to eat, much to the amusement of the passengers and waiters. There were three significant debates that Brother Roberts was involved in a period from 1871 to 1879. Concerning the Bradlaugh debate, we're told that there can be little doubt that the contest proved disappointing to both sides. This was because on both sides there had been an anticipation of triumph such as does not often come to the disputers of this world, said Brother Collier. And Brother Collier went on to say that in the course of the debates that the champion seemed to be more important than the justice of the cause. Those debates were quite intense and quite draining on Brother Roberts. He was at that time about 40 years of age when those debates were held. And there's actually a book that was printed which has all of those three debates in it. You may have seen it. Those debates from 1871 to 1879. As you can see, there's quite a bit of material that were covered. And they're all actually verbatim recorded in there by someone who was very good at shorthand. The Bradlaugh debate, I've read probably more on the Edward Hine one, but yeah, go on, Andrew, if you know something about him.
Oh, not a lot. He said to say, I think he was a great skeptic. And there's another book called The Trial, in which there's a thing about a reference to him in this man by the name of Bradlaugh.
Oh, that's right.
In the trial, of course, Brother Roberts
Thanks, Andrew. I'm not sure, but I know there was a period in time during Brother Roberts' life where there was a significant division in the Brotherhood in England over the inspiration of the Scriptures. I'm not sure whether it coincided with the time of that debate or not. Someone may happen to know. But certainly it was a subject of contention in those times. And Brother Roberts was patient for a period of time on that matter, and then he forced his hand. And it did result in a split in the Birmingham Ecclesia, but Brother Roberts saw that to do otherwise would have been to ultimately lead to the destruction of the whole truth. Does that jump forward? Just jump forward one, John. I think that... No, go back, sorry. Did we jump one on lecturing? Yep. On lecturing, yep. As it says there, Brother Roberts himself was impressed by the argument of reason, and in all his lectures he attempted to use that same technique. And his subjects of choice were nearly always prophetical, but in any case they were always closely related to the subject of the gospel. And he was fond of presenting lectures in a series, sometimes a series of four, sometimes in the case of the ones that were conducted at Huddersfield, it was a series of 12. And he also was also fond of using a series of questions to demonstrate his point. It's worthwhile reading, I think, for all of us, but particularly for young brethren, when you're doing a lecture perhaps for the first time, to read through Christendom Astray, if nothing else, on the subject that you're speaking on, because it's surprising just how much material you can get out of that. Not only just material, but the way that Brother Roberts reasoned his argument through. One of the, I find, best lectures that he did that demonstrates his reasoning ability is to address all the arguments associated with the immortality of the soul. Sometimes I think our lectures can be a little narrow, but Brother Roberts was able to one at a time, logically go through all of the points of popular teaching and to address them. So it's well worth reading for that benefit. Not all of Brother Roberts's lectures were well attended. When he first started lecturing in Huddersfield, just him and his wife, some of the lectures were very sparsely attended, but that didn't deter him from continuing his work. On the other hand, by the time he was about 27 in Birmingham, one of the lectures that was conducted there attracted over 2,000 people. Quite incredible, really, when you think about it. One of the more memorable lectures was held in Birmingham in 1866. And at that time, there was in the churches a growing expectation that Christ was about to return and that the whole earth was going to be burnt up. And, of course, this started to get the brethren agitated in Birmingham. They wanted to do something fairly significant to address this this doctrine that was becoming widely publicised, but they were fairly stretched for resources. What happened, though, that the Catholic Church desired to conduct a lecture on this subject, and they hired the Birmingham Town Hall for that purpose. The event was well advertised, and as a consequence of that, the hall was fully packed, and thousands of people missed out. And the overflow was hanging around the front of the Birmingham Town Hall. And amongst that crowd was Robert Roberts and some of the brethren from Birmingham who had also missed out on gaining admission. And as the crowd lingered, someone found Robert Roberts and someone found a chair and brought the two together. And so Robert Roberts ascended the chair and began to address the audience that had come to listen to this lecture that was presented by the Catholics. He began his lecture tactfully, assuring his hearers that the earth was not about to be destroyed. But when he proceeded to draw out the significance of the time, so far as the decline in temporal power of the papacy was concerned, the crowd became increasingly agitated. And I'd like to read to you just a small section from here, which I think goes to show the sort of fervour that Brother Roberts had and the willingness to put his life in jeopardy. So we read from Islip Collier once again. It says, "There were also some young students in the crowd who, it is to be feared, cared nothing either for the papal dignity or for Protestant zeal, but who thought it would be distinctly amusing if the red-bearded orator were to fall from the top of his chair. The crowd began to heave like the waves of the sea. Robert Roberts would have continued his address if only the troubles that had been caused by the insecure platform and the menacing... if the only troubles had been the insecure platform and the menacing crowd. But when in addition to these difficulties that... But in addition to these difficulties, there were such shouts and counter-shouts that no one could hear what he said. He soon, however, stepped from his chair and proceeded to walk away from the most hostile elements of the crowd. Soon, however, he was recognised, and some sons of Belial collected to mob him. Suddenly, two stalwart policemen took the speaker in charge, one on each side, and he was marched away, feeling rather as if he might be a criminal. The policemen took him into the Temperance Hotel, where an angular lady gave him a welcome, and he escaped through the back door. And there was more than one occasion where those sorts of things happened, where Brother Roberts had stones thrown at him and was mobbed by the crowd. And yet his vigour and his determination to preach the gospel did not subside. That incident reminds me of a little bit of the experience of Paul in Acts, where we read that the crowd gave audience to him for a while, and then at a certain point they began to say, "Away with this fellow." Just the next one, thanks, Johnny. Just to give you some idea of the Birmingham Town Hall, it was not a small place. This was the place where the Catholics hide in the first instance, and Brother Robert spoke from to the overflow at the outside. And it was also where, subsequently, many of the lectures of the Birmingham Ecclesia were conducted. And as I said earlier, it was in this place where Brother Robert spoke to an audience of around 2,000 people. Here's an example. I thought it had some relevance. Here's an example of an advertisement that Brother Roberts designed himself. It was designed while he was en route from one city to another. And as you can see there, the four topics that he picked, once again in a series, were all to do with prophecy. There is another comment that I wanted to read, actually. I'll see if I can find it in... Brother Roberts, in the Diary of the Second Voyage, makes a comment about advertising lectures. He has this to say. He says the lecture, he's speaking of a lecture where he had just presented. The lecture had been advertised as a Christadelphian lecture. This, I cannot but think, is a mistake. The object in advertising a lecture is to get the people to come. You frustrate this object by putting forward a sectarian association. This association is a fact, but there is a time for everything. Let it be found out afterwards. It will do the public no good to know it in advance. Parade the subject, but do not tell the public it is the Christadelphians that are inviting them. Those who are interested will find this out in time enough and will not be deterred by it when their eyes have begun to open. To tell them that this at the very start is like an angler who should frighten his fish off by some glaring fly." And he goes on to say, "Show the light and it will dispel the darkness, but do not draw attention to the lantern, which is but a poor and rusty affair." There's just a couple of points I thought we could make about his writings. And the first is that perhaps, unlike Brother Thomas, Brother Roberts wrote on a broader range of subjects. He wrote not only on prophetical subjects, but he also wrote books like Seasons of Comfort, which, of course, is a compilation of some of the exhortations that he gave, writings which were designed to console those brothers and sisters in England who were experiencing great difficulty. Towards the end of his life, Brother Roberts wrote this. He said, looking back, and he was commenting on the Christadelphian of August 1869, he says, looking back, I am made to feel the modifying effects of time on all human excitements. If I had to write it now, it would not be so juvenile in any sense. I would not fling so many epithets, nor serve the vinegar quite so strong. I was writing under the stimulus of feelings that owed their intensity in some degree to the doctor's presence, as well as to the virulence of the enemy's attacks. Towards the end of his life, now at the age of 57, Brother Roberts and his wife and two daughters had decided to move to Melbourne. And there are a number of reasons for that, as you can see there, including financial difficulties, his health, but also, more importantly, to provide support and encouragement for brethren and sisters in Australia. But he was, of course, to continue his work as the editor. The residence that he took up outside Melbourne is shown there in this slide, and it's actually the photographs, both of them are taken at the side of the residence. The front of it is sort of around to the right. And if you go there today, you can't actually take a photo from the same perspective that that original is in 1897, simply because there's another building in the way. But what's of interest in this picture is you'll see what they referred to as the tower on top of the building. It actually had a view in all directions. And that was the place where Brother Roberts did his writing. It was a place where he says, I would be uninterrupted. And it was in that little tower that Brother Roberts wrote most of the Law of Moses. Well, Brother Roberts' intention when him and his family came to Australia was that they were to return to England every second year. But for reasons of which we aren't certain, it was decided that he was to make an early return to England not long after he'd been in Australia. And this was, brothers and sisters, to be his last journey from Sydney to San Francisco in 1898. And there's a picture of the ship that Brother Robert sailed on. He was quite accustomed to travelling on ships, possibly because his father was a sailor, and maybe he sort of got some nautical blood as a result of that. But Brother Roberts set out in 1898 to return to England via America. And he wrote concerning the departure that he spent the last day in Sydney with his wife, of course, and he says, we could not help some degree of sadness at the prospect of separating so soon for so long a time. And little did they know, of course, that parting was to be the last time they would see one another until the return of Christ. On the 21st of September, Brother Roberts reached San Francisco. He gave an address at a brother's house the following day, and that evening he was escorted back to the Cosmopolitan Hotel where he was staying and was bid good night. The next day, he was to proceed on the next stage of his journey. I'll just read to you, brothers and sisters, from those last few moments in that morning on the 23rd of September when Brother Roberts passed away, and I think Brother Collier captures them well. Mindful of duty, Robert Roberts rose early on the morning of September 23. He asked for the key of the bathroom and we believe took a cold plunge, which perhaps imposed another strain on the overloaded vital organ. He returned to his bedroom and proceeded to dress. Only a few more hundred heartbeats now. He finished his toilet and only needed to put on his overcoat to be ready for the journey. But he, of course, commenced another journey, we might say. He was in course. His body was moved to the other side of America, to New York, a very fitting place for him to come to rest beside Brother Thomas. And thanks be to Stephen Hill, I was able to get this photograph of his tombstone, which is not a bad one actually, because some of the the other ones that I've seen, it's very hard to read the writing, but just in case you can't, the words are there on the right. Here lies Robert Roberts of Birmingham, England, editor of the Christadelphian, author of Christendom Australia and many other works, who for 40 years in the front ranks of the Christadelphians aided and continued the work begun by Dr. Thomas, by whose side he now sleeps in Jesus. And as Brother Roberts was lowered into the grave, the brethren sang what was for him a fitting hymn, "Short is the measure of our days." Well, let's consider then for a moment, brothers and sisters, what his impact has been on the truth. No doubt one of the most significant impacts was his written works. You can see there that over a period of about 30 years, he wrote, apart from the magazine, a large number of books, and there's only the major works that are recorded there. Some of them that are perhaps we might consider as most significant to us are the Blood of Christ, and also the, as we said earlier, the Bible Reader's Companion. He was also quite instrumental in establishing ecclesial protocol and establishing ecclesias on a sound footing so far as administration was concerned. And in 1883, he wrote that ecclesial guide. But I think the other significant thing, brethren and sisters, that Brother Roberts achieved was that he inculcated a habit amongst those of his time to read the Bible daily. And you can read the words for yourself, how he wrote that our success in the truth is going to be directly related to the effort that we put into reading the scriptures daily. "It is only in proportion as this is done," he said, "that success may be looked for." Well, what can we say about the spirit of Brother Roberts? Well, first of all, the most important thing was that he was a God-centred man. He said these words, "Things divorced from the purpose and the love of God are like the spokes separated from the hub and circumference of a wheel." He went on to say in another place, "The truth is liable to be lost again through the inability of complacent minds of limited grasp to see its wide-lying breadth, and through their tendency to sympathise more readily with the human than the divine bearing of its doctrines. The doctrines of the truth embody the thoughts of God, and the thoughts of God are higher than the thoughts of man, and therefore the majority of men easily fail to rise to the height of them or easily fall from their height when lifted up to them." He was, in many ways, a man with singleness of mind. He made many sacrifices for the truth so far as pleasures and opportunities in this world was concerned. He wrote to Brother Thomas on one occasion and said, "If brethren would cease to hide their light under a bushel, men might be attracted by the glimmering light of life." It was said of him, brothers and sisters, that there was no lukewarmness in him. And I think that's a very fitting and succinct description. His convictions were overwhelmingly strong, and they sometimes found expression with emotional urge of dangerous intensity. A medical doctor once warned his daughters that there was danger in such excitement for a man of their father's build. As far as sacrifice was concerned, brothers and sisters, his greatness was not limited to the pen and the platform. At 23 years of age, after having lost his job, he put his last coin in a collection bag in Birmingham. On hearing of a brother in real need, he mailed the only thing he could to help, his watch. "Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have I give." On many occasions, Brother Robert suffered serious loss in trying to support young brethren who were beginning their life in the workforce. And many of the financial or many of the business ventures that he funded failed. But nevertheless, brothers and sisters, his heart was always in the right place. And one of the other features that I've found in reading about Brother Roberts that I think is something that's somewhat overlooked is his unfeigned humility. And I'd like to give you just a few examples of that. And most of these are words taken from Brother Collier, who says, "He never had the slightest desire to be the subject of special attention or to be put in the place of honour. That belonged to Christ and to him alone. Great men, he said, do not exist. Poor men are vanity and great men are a lie." He was so free from the ordinary feelings of pride and dignity that it probably never occurred to him that any special exercises were necessary to humble flesh. Or if they had been necessary, he would not have thought that cleaning the shoes of a disciple would meet the needs. In his autobiography, he mentioned some matters which almost any other man would have suppressed. He was, in the proper sense of the expression, a very simple-minded man. He condescended to men of low estate. He would far sooner have conversed with a rag and bone man who had an intelligent interest in the scriptures than with a lord who cared nothing for them. And it was said that if Robert said he was given the task of speaking to children, that almost no one could match him. It was also said that he might afterwards arrive home dirty and dishevelled, but he was almost devoid of any dignity as it is usually understood in the world. And so to sum up then, brothers and sisters, his work and his labour of love, we have these words from Islip Collier. "He was frequently uncomfortable, both physically and mentally, a lover of home, so often going away, a lover of peace, so often having to do battle for principle, and a lover of fellow man, feeling constrained to choose a course which turned friends into enemies. In a very real sense, he was one who lost his life for the sake of the gospel."